This is the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Now, here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers podcast.
His career in sports media began at the age of four. Mark Murphy was a gopher for Buddy Rutledge in the Auburn radio booth at the old Cliff Hare Stadium. You see, Mark's father was the engineer for the broadcasts. That started a career that took him to Auburn University, then Selma and Columbus, before coming back to the Plains. Since 1981, Mark has led Inside the Auburn Tigers and Auburn Undercover. The career of Mark Murphy is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. Welcome into another edition of the Talking Tigers podcast. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we talked with Philip Marshall, who has 51 years of experience covering college football in the state of Alabama. And the next guy on the beat in Auburn is Mark Murphy, who Philip works with, as a matter of fact. Mark has been with several different entities covering Auburn. When did it start for you, Mark? When was that first event that you were starting to cover Auburn University?
Oh, I guess it was probably about the time I was a freshman in college, Andy, writing for the Opelika Auburn News. Did a lot of high school coverage, did some Auburn University coverage. I was assistant sports editor of the Plainsman, actually, at Auburn before I even enrolled. I went over to the campus office after I graduated high school, and I went in to see the sports editor that summer. And I said, if you need some help, I need all the experience I can get. And he said, that's good, because I don't have anybody on my staff for the summer. And he gave me the assignment of doing all the previews for the upcoming football games for that season. So I've been doing it for a couple of years, and that was, I guess it was the summer of 1971.
A little bit of background on you, Mark, because you and your family have been in this business for quite some time. Would you agree?
I'd say so. My father was engineer for the Auburn radio network as one of his part-time gigs. He was a radio and television engineer, and he got into the printing business later on in life. And actually, they printed the Auburn University programs when I was growing up for a long time then after that. And then, you know, I really got started around sports and football when I was probably around 4 years old, because they would take me to the football games, the basketball games, and baseball games. And I was the gopher. The old Cliff Hare Stadium press box was quite different than the new one right now. And one of my jobs was, I was the guy who took care of Mr. Buddy Rutledge. He was the play-by-play guy. And I was supposed to sit there in the back of the two-story booth for the radio network. And if Mr. Rutledge needed something, I'd go get it, because Buddy was in a wheelchair and he just couldn't get out and move real easily. So I'd go get him a sandwich, or I'd go get him a drink, or I'd run get stats for him and whatever. And this started when I was 4 years old, and it was very interesting because they had these big spotting boards there in front. And I was a bit of a precocious kid when it came to sports, and I would read newspapers at a really early age to get box scores, because I love baseball, and that was my first real passion, baseball. So I would learn how to read those spotting boards. Charlie Davis, who was the guy who did those, and so I'd be there hours before the game. I'd watch them all get set up. So I just really grew up on it. I had one of the craziest assignments ever as a kid. The power cords for the plug-in to get the network going, there weren't any ones powerful enough, or weren't enough there in the radio booth, and they had to crawl down to the other end of the press box to get plugged up. So they would lower me down onto the catwalk, which was not strong enough to really hold an adult, they didn't think, but they'd tie a rope around me, and I would crawl down and plug in the plugs, crawl back, get some more plugs, plug them in, and they pull me back up, give me a drink, and say, be quiet and go fetch for Mr. Rutledge if he needs something.
This is also in the days when the press box did not have an elevator.
That's right. And to get Buddy up into the press box, Buddy Rutledge, they would have members of the freshman football team who weren't playing that day. They had to have some strong guys to get him up, because the Boomer was a big, big guy. It was very interesting to watch that. And that was quite the staircase to get up there, too.
Mark, where have you lived in your life?
Born in Ames, Iowa. My dad was a graduate of Iowa State. Moved to Auburn when I was very young. He started Alabama Public Television, which was pre-runner of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And it's back in a period where they did a lot of teaching of classes of high school, junior high, and even elementary at Channel 7, Mount Cheehaw, that was originated at the Auburn University campus at the old tower that's no longer there. The broadcast tower is Mount Cheehaw. I really grew up around the television station too. Spent a lot of time over there as a kid, got to watch a lot of the live shows being done. So I really grew up around, you know, television, radio, and sports. My first job out of college, I was sports editor of the Selma Times Journal. Then I went to Columbus, Georgia, to a much bigger newspaper, and I was assistant sports editor there and later became news editor. They decided to open up a bureau in Auburn, and they asked me if I would do that. So I did that, which was kind of cool because I got to cover sports and really other things too as well. And then 1981, I started the magazine Inside the Auburn Tigers.
And that's where we see you today.
I've been doing it a couple years.
Mark, I'll be honest with you, and until you were talking about your father, I had always thought that he was part of the print side. When did he make that move then into the printing world?
When I was in high school, he decided to buy Craftmaster printers.
Mark, when did you know? I mean, you talked about working even as a four-year-old in the Auburn radio booth, but when did you know that you wanted to make this covering sports, covering Auburn, covering high schools? When did you know you wanted to make that your profession?
You know, probably in college, to be honest with you, because I was planning to go into oceanography, and that was, you know, probably where my aptitude was too, but you know, I decided to take my freshman year. I grew up in Auburn, decided to go to Auburn for my freshman year. So you had to declare something as a major. Now, Auburn didn't really have an oceanography program. And I was thinking about going to law school too. And I knew I could go to law school no matter, you know, what I really majored in. So I ended up taking a lot of political science classes so I could go to law school. I was really planning on going to law school all along. And even though I wrote for like three or four newspapers when I was in college, I wrote for a couple magazines, and I did the Plainsman. I was sports editor in 74, 75, my senior year, and I really enjoyed that. David Housel, who was the Plainsman advisor at that time, gave me a phone call right before my final exam as a senior. I remember it was an astronomy class in the physics. I remember distinctly because I was studying for the final exam, and it was one question. The question was, explain Einstein's theory of relativity. And that was like, that was it. And he said, and so he called me up like it was late at night. And I was going like, all right, David, what's going on? You're calling me this late at night. He said, I want you to do me a favor. And I was going, what's he got in mind? He said, I've got a job interview for you. And I said, I already got a couple job offers if I want to go into journalism, but I think I'm going to law school. And he said, do me a favor, just go interview with the Selma Times Journal. It's in a newspaper group that we haven't gotten anybody placed with. And I said, I don't really want to go down there. He said, just do it as a favor for me. I said, okay, I'll do it for you. So I went down there, did the interview, liked the people, and I knew what everybody was getting offered coming out of journalism school for salaries, and it wasn't very good, to be honest with you. So I sat down with the publisher, and he said, we really want you. And I said, well, I appreciate that. And he said, how much will it take? So I threw a number out there that I knew he wouldn't accept. He walked over to me, shook my hand, and said, can you start in 2 weeks? I said, what did I just do? So that's really how I got into it.
Look at those early days, especially your college days at Auburn, Mark. And you're around Auburn's first Heisman Trophy winner, the incredible Amazons team and Punt Bama Punt. And I guess up until the end of Coach Jordan's career as Auburn's head coach. What stands out to you the most in those days? Because, I mean, as you mentioned, you weren't just covering football. You were covering basketball and baseball and a lot of sports, and have continued to do so to this very day.
You know, there's a lot that really stand out. I love that 1972 team. because they were just tough as nails. And they'd been told over and over again they weren't going to be any good because they lost all the good players off the 1971 team. And that 71 team was certainly really good. I admired Pat Sullivan as a person just as much as I did as a football player, a great guy. Coach Jordan was a guy that I really considered, you know, sort of like a father figure to me. He was a great guy. You know, he was very supportive of me when I got started. And he would occasionally comment on an article that I wrote when he'd see me and say, "That was a really good article. You need to do this for a living." And I'd always tell him, "Thank you." But I really probably wasn't planning on doing it for a living. But it was nice to have him talk to me about that. And I just enjoyed it a lot. And Auburn was a great place to go to school at that time. A lot of fun being there, being just around the people. And it was kind of cool. You could go watch football practice whenever I wanted to, or basketball practice whenever I wanted to, baseball. And I enjoyed just seeing players develop and getting better from freshmen to sophomore to juniors and seniors. And to me, that's one of the most interesting parts. And seeing people change personality-wise, coming in as insecure freshmen and leaving as people ready to go out and have families and really become a big part of their communities. And, you know, I really enjoyed my time with Coach Dye, too, because, you know, he could be a rough, gruff, kind of a scary type of character until you got to know him, but inside he was a big teddy bear. And, you know, he mellowed with Auburn. I think Auburn was good for him and vice versa. And he really developed a love for Auburn. And one of my favorite things I've actually done in this business in recent years was every Monday morning, Coach Dye would be at my office in football season, or all really throughout the year. And we'd sit down together and work on his column for our website, The Digest. And he loved doing that. And he loved to just sit there, talk football, basketball, softball, women's hoops, whatever, with me and just get my opinion on things. And I like to get his opinion too.
Mark, it's interesting you bring that up, because when I was talking with Philip a couple weeks ago on this podcast, and I knew I was going to ask you this question as well, because Philip is probably best known for writing about Auburn football, but he has interest in basketball and women's basketball and baseball and softball. And you've had that interest in Auburn athletics as a whole. And you've done a lot of articles on folks that the general public doesn't know a whole lot about until you write about them. Auburn swimming and soccer and that type of thing. Just talk about your affinity, not only to write the big story, and you do that, and you write about the big events that are going on, but looking for that other story for an athletics event that perhaps not a lot of folks know about at that point.
For sure, I enjoy doing that. And, you know, the swimming and diving program was a lot of fun to cover when David Marsh was here and got it going. And even before that, when I was in college, they had two absolutely great coaches that I wrote about. Richard Quick was, you know, later became the head coach at Auburn. Then had Eddie Reese, who was the men's coach, and Richard Quick was the women's coach. And, you know, they were just phenomenal. What they did with that program was really lousy facilities at that time. And they both became Olympic head coaches for the United States. And then David Marsh came in, one of the swimmers who competed for Auburn in that period, and became one of the most successful swimming coaches in Auburn history. And I was always impressed with just what type of individuals were involved in those teams. They were super high achievers away from their sport too. And the amount of time and work they had to put into being national caliber and world-class swimmers that some of them turned into always impressed me. Enjoyed my time getting to cover Joe Champion's basketball teams. As you know, Joe's a bit of a character, to say the least. And those games were a lot of fun to cover. And, you know, when he really had it going there in the 1980s, those teams were tremendously fun to watch. They made three Final Fours, and I firmly believe they – were the best team at least one of those years, and just had a bad break with Vicky Orr's knee problem, having to play back-to-back games out there in that Final Four out in Tacoma that year. If her knee hadn't been bothering, they would have won the national championship that year. And getting to cover Hal Baird on baseball, I mean, that's really enjoyable, Andy. what a great human being and a really good baseball coach and one of my favorite people in the world.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Every one of those folks you just talked about. And Philip echoed this same thing as well, Mark. It's hard not to become friends with them as long as we've covered these folks. And it's hard not to root for them and to root for the programs that they're around. When you're around them as much as we are, I think it's just natural that you want them to succeed.
Yeah, I enjoyed seeing those teams have success because the people involved in it and their athletes and all the good stories that came out of it. And, right now we've got some teams doing really well. In fact, this morning I talked to Greg Williams, the equestrian coach. I'm going to interview one of his riders tomorrow from down in Dothan, Terry June Granger, for a feature in the January issue of the magazine. And, she's going to end up being one of the all-time most successful equestrian riders in Auburn history, which is saying a lot because they've had a lot of really good ones. And I enjoy talking to folks like that because a lot of them have very interesting background stories.
What does it say, though, that you look for those stories that are not necessarily the mainstream story? Because, listen, if you wrote nothing but Auburn football and maybe men's basketball, folks would be reading that. But you also go out there and go out there to the equestrian and women's basketball and soccer and track and field, whatever it is, just to try and tell that full story of Auburn athletics.
I think part of it goes back to when I was growing up and newspapers dominated the coverage in the state. That was about all there was to cover Auburn sports. And there wasn't a lot of in-depth coverage. Even football wasn't really done in debt. And I remember a couple of times there were some really good stories going on in Auburn that were just totally missed or overlooked. And, being around it, I understood, what was going on here at Auburn. And I was just going like, somebody ought to do something about that. I didn't know it was going to be me, but I just thought it's a shame some of these stories weren't being told. And, when I decided to start the magazine, I saw it as an opportunity to do some of those things.
Wickles Pickles is proud to be the new sponsor of the Talking Tigers podcast. From Saturday sandwiches to Thanksgiving dinner, that secret 90-year-old recipe has people from all over calling to get some of those sweet and spicy jars. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Made fresh in Dadeville, Alabama. Mark, talk about how your job and how you do your job has changed since you started inside the Auburn Tigers.
It really has changed because the big switch happened in the start of the internet era. And sort of the joke was we weren't on the leading edge of the internet technology. We were sort of on the bleeding edge of it because we were trying to get things figured out how it was going to work. And I credit one of my friends, Floyd Vest, who worked at the university and was really up to speed with all this. He's really an expert in all that area. And he told me a long time ago, he said, it's coming. You got to get ready for it. It's where things are going to be going in the sports world. And he helped me understand that and get a head start on all that. So we've been doing the internet part of the equation for many years. And sort of the joke around here at the office is we spend so much time on our internet coverage that the magazine's become like my hobby. But I still love doing the magazine, still love doing our football newsletter, which we started that 4 or 5 years after we began the magazine and to get a little more in-depth football coverage. And we still do that football newsletter, all the time now. A lot of our folks get it sent to them by email instead of by regular mail. But we still have people who don't like computers and like to have the printed copy in their hand. We still, serve those folks too, Andy.
Look at the time that you've covered Auburn, basically from the 1971 on. Whether it's one of those huge stories like Bo over the top or punt Bama punt or the kick six or something like that, what story stands out to you for whatever reason, whether it was the way it unfolded, the people involved, the access that you had to the story? Spotlight a couple of those stories that you're going to remember maybe for as long as you're in this career.
I remember one of the funny stories it happened. It was years ago at Plainsman Park, and I was sitting next to a scout for the St. Louis Cardinals, and he was there to watch Frank Thomas play. We were sitting there talking back and forth, and finally, about the seventh inning, Frank hit a line drive. He was either over the right center field fence or the bounced it over the right center field fence, and it was a low outside fastball. And I just asked the guy, I said, if you don't mind, tell me what you're going to put in your report about Frank. And he said, he's a good college player, but he doesn't have enough bat speed to hit major league pitching. And I said, if I were you, I wouldn't put that in report because he's going to make you look bad. And so I think that was one of my better predictions ever. Since Frank became the first SEC baseball player to make the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. The 1982 Bo Over the Top game was certainly amazing because there was such frustration built up among Auburn football fans losing to Alabama every year from 1973 on until that 1982 game. And just the pure unbridled joy of the whole thing was interesting. I remember that game a couple years later up in Birmingham with the tornado warning. I was in the press box. I knew about the warning, and I got out of the press box, out on the ledge out there, so I could see that tornado was coming. So I was going to sprint down the stairs for cover if it came nearby. But I remember watching, and other people knew too there was a tornado warning, but like that game was so good, nobody left. Stayed there in the wind and the driving rain and watched a great football game. And being there at the Final Four in Minneapolis of the recent events and seeing the officials blow that game late on the missed call on the double dribble and then the questionable call calling Samir Dowdy for the foul in the corner when the contact was initiated by the Virginia player. I think that was probably one of the more memorable events I've covered too.
You and I talk broadcasters from time to time, Mark, and I wasn't aware that you were in the radio booth as early as you were. So if you would, and I know Paul, I've known Jim, obviously I knew Rod. Give me an idea about the guys that preceded Paul, Buddy Rutledge and Gary Sanders and those guys and what their personalities were like.
You know, Buddy Rutledge had this unbelievably big bass voice, really understood the game, but he loved football and he loved basketball. He didn't do the baseball games. Auburn fans really liked him. And it's one of those kind of voices that it took you about two or three words and you knew that was Buddy Rutledge calling the game. And Gary Sanders was, and Gusty Yearout, who was a former Auburn player, who was his color analyst. Those two guys got about as excited about Auburn games as anybody you'll ever listen to. And, you know, a lot of people have recordings of their call of the block punts in 1972. They actually made 45 single records of those things. I think I still got one around the office somewhere, and they're really enjoyable. Paul did a really good job too, and he understands sports frontwards and backwards and real professional, to say the least.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mark, as you look at your profession now, and granted, this year, 2020, is unlike anything that any of us have gone through. Thank goodness that we have Zoom and the ability to cover things remotely. I'm not sure how we'd have done our jobs otherwise this year. But when you look back on 2020, not just from a personal standpoint, we've all known people that have been affected by COVID and some have passed away. What will be your take on the year 2020 as someone that has been around for a while and has covered a great deal of events in Auburn history?
You know, I think there was some serious doubt back in June and July, you know, if we'd have anything to cover this fall, Andy, to be honest with you, as far as college sports goes, because there were some, I think, real serious consideration not to play in at all. And I think what's going to stand out to me is how the Southeastern Conference took a leading role in figuring out how to do this thing and do it safely for the athletes. I never really seriously thought the athletes were at health risk to go out and compete. Now, folks who were around the athletes, you know, guys who are coaches who are like 55, 60 years old and support personnel, that's a different situation. And they've had to be super careful with that. And I think what's going to stand out to me is how much commitment has been put in by Doc Goodlett and support staff helping him out, and for the athletes and coaches themselves, so they could have this season happen. And I hope folks understand how much sacrifice has been put into it by the athletes themselves to try to make it happen.
Mark, if you would reflect on some folks that you have worked around, worked with, worked next to in the sports writing business through your career. Philip obviously has been doing this for over a half century now. But some of those folks that you worked with, not necessarily at the same paper or the same publication, but you guys were there covering the same events week after week after week.
You know, there's been a lot of really interesting people I've got to meet through this over the years, Andy, and I want to shout out Buddy Davidson. I mean, when I was a wet behind the ears kid reporter in college, you know, Buddy was very supportive of me and gave me some really good tips that helped me become a sports writer, I thought. And he was the SID at that time, and he was a really good one for Auburn. And you know, he was the SID when Pat Sullivan won the Heisman Trophy, and I think he had a real part in making that happen. And of course, David Housel, who later became the athletic director, was my first journalism instructor and a very good writer and somebody who was always super supportive of me coming along. You know, Gary Shelton was one of my friends in the sports writing business from over in Columbus, Georgia, a very talented writer. Enjoyed, you know, working with him a lot. Roscoe Nance, who I worked with in Columbus, is retired now, but he worked for USA Today, did a lot of writing in a variety of different areas. Fun person to work with. Jason Caldwell has been working with me for 2 decades, has a wonderful understanding of sports and people, and just loves what he's doing. And boy, he's got a really good eye for analyzing what's going on in a sporting event. Those are some of the folks that really stand out.
Mark, how long do you want to do this?
I'm still having fun at it. And if the COVID stuff keeps going on like for much longer, I don't know how much longer I want to do it, because I like to actually be there to be able to watch practices. I miss not going out and watching Bruce Pearl's team practice. You know, I used to do that a couple times a week, have a feel for what was going to happen in a game before it happened. As long as my health stays good, hopefully I keep doing this for a long time, Andy.
I want to ask you your perspective on the 2010 National Championship team, Mark. It's hard to believe, and everyone I talk to says the same. It's hard to believe it's been a decade since that team won the national championship. But Auburn had so many teams that were so good, and in 83, you know, their leapfrog in the final poll. 93, they don't ever get a chance to play for a national championship. 04, they should have at least played for a national championship that year. And finally in 2010, and a team that before the season, I'm not sure any of us thought we would be in the desert at the national championship game. But when you look back on that year, and after all those years of maybe having a chance or not even getting the chance to play for a title, that 2010 team then became the first since 1957 to lift the national championship banner at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And for someone like you that had basically lived in Auburn your whole life and your whole career, what do you think that game meant to Auburn?
I tell you, Andy, I've never seen so many Auburn people trying to get a ticket for a football game as in 2010 out there in Arizona. And I remember when I got off the plane, Jason went out there a couple of days ahead of me, and I came out there and went straight from the airport, put my bags up in the hotel, and went out to the practice at the junior college out there. I guess it was in Scottsdale. Got back to the car, and there was like a sticker, a flyer on my cards with phone numbers. If you got tickets, call this number. And I'm serious. Some of the craziest things I've ever seen as far as people calling me trying to get tickets. It was just nuts. Tickets were going for crazy amounts. As I was walking into the stadium, I had my computer bag I was carrying along and had something else around my bag. So this guy walks up to me and says, I'll buy your press credential, and he reaches in his pocket and hands me $2,000. I said, I can't do that. And, he said, okay. He reaches in another pocket, $3,000. He goes, no, I said, I can't do that. And he said, okay, best offer, $5,000 cash. Oh, he offered me for that credential. And I said, look, I said, I'm going to this game. I'm going to cover it. It's my job. I can't miss this game. But what he did not know is even if I had sold him that pass for $5,000, he wasn't getting into the game because there was a second security level credential because there was such demand for that game. They were worried about counterfeiting tickets. So you had to have this special pin in addition to the press pass to get into that thing, or else they were going to flag you as being in there illegally. But it was nuts. And a lot of people ended up going out there to the desert and just not actually getting into the game because they tried to get tickets and couldn't get them.
Mark, I've told this story about the post game of that one. And like every other reporter, I was on the field when Wes Byram hit the game winning field goal. And then we did a bunch of live player interviews for our broadcast, and then actually went back into the locker room and talked to a couple people, and then I was done. And I called my brother, who had become and is a big Auburn fan now, just to talk to him on the way up to the elevator. But as Brad Law and Larry Wilkins were wrapping up the equipment in the booth, the rest of the crew, which included Rod and Stan and Bo Benton, who at that time was the spotter, and just a couple of the rest of us, just sat at a table behind our booth, just waiting to help with the equipment to take it down. And we just looked at each other, and for some of these folks had been around longer than I have, but it was hard to believe that it had finally occurred. It was a surreal moment for us. For someone like you, did you have a chance to reflect on that at all?
I tell you what, I was so busy writing and doing content. It was probably that night before it hit me. You know, it finally happened after all those frustrating times, the ones you mentioned, like 1983. For people who weren't around then, Auburn fans were mad. They were furious about that because they really believed they had the best team. And I remember I was driving back from New Orleans and I heard the radio report, the poll about Auburn being jumped. I was thinking, like, those players are really going to be disappointed with all the hard work they put into it. And then, of course, that 2004 team could certainly have won a national championship if it had been given the opportunity to play for it. And, you know, the 2013 team, boy, that was a tough one because out in Pasadena, you know, I thought Auburn had the better team that year, and Florida State found a way to pull it out. I remember standing on the goal line when Michael Dyer had the go-ahead touchdown, and one of the guys on the Auburn sideline, one of the staff members, came up to me and said, he said, Auburn's winning the national championship. I said, not so fast. Mm. He scored too quick. I've just seen Florida State play, and I knew they were going to have a chance to come back, you know, and win at the end. And so when you get a chance to win those national championships, you got to really savor them because they're very difficult in a sport like football.
Well put, well put. Mark, thank you for going down memory lane. I appreciate you telling your story today. I certainly enjoy the work that you and Philip and Jason and all the folks there do. Certainly appreciate that. And I appreciate your time today.
I enjoy doing it with you, Andy.
I hope I can say this. War Eagle, Mark.
War Eagle to you.
For Mark Murphy and the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles, I'm Andy Bertram. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.